So we have right now two parallel economies, one in which we're seeing automobile delinquencies, credit card delinquencies, even foreclosures of homes begin to pick up, and real pain on Main Street, and yet Wall Street in a celebratory mode. And Jay Powell able to hide behind data, the likes of which we've never seen, cushioned by severance pay, which will not show up in non-farm payrolls and will not show up in initial jobless claims, creating the facade of strength that really isn't there, while the inevitably delayed filing and increase in joblessness is held at bay.
Are you ready to transform your life? This is a no-nonsense show helping immigrants like you create generational wealth, even while working full-time. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Saket Jain.
Welcome back, my Great to Wealth listeners. Today, you're in for a treat. One of the persons that I've been following for a long time now has been one of the guys and gals who I've been following a lot and been my unofficial mentors. One of them is Danielle DiMartina Booth. I had a chance of meeting Danielle at one of the mastermind meetings that we had a few years ago in Belize. And I was a fan of the work before then, but when I heard her speak, I'm like, the thing was, if I ever have a podcast, I'd be so blessed to have Danielle as a guest. And today we have Danielle as a guest. For those of you who don't know Danielle, Danielle is a former advisor to the president of the Dallas Fed. She's an author of Fed Up and an insider's take on why the Federal Reserve is bad for America, and the founder of QI Research. As you will learn, and this description to her does not do justice. She's much more than what I just talked about. But if I started introducing her, it'll take the entire 30 minutes or 40 minutes. So, like, you know what? We'll jump into the conversation. Danielle, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. And that was a perfect introduction. So I prefer that people have in their mind their own view of what I am. I think my favorite is I get an MBA for free on her Twitter feed. That's usually,
I love that. Yes, I'm one of the followers. Danielle, I think I want to keep the conversation very, very narrow and concentrated with you. Usually we go in all different directions, but I think given your expertise and your experience and you being an insider, I want to basically try understanding of what's happening on the Main Street, what's happening on the Wall Street, and how to make sense out of those two. Especially one of the things is that when you look at the data that's been presented to you from the media, and you look at the policies that have been adopted and the stuff that's happening on the monetary and fiscal policy, they don't necessarily add up for me. So I thought, you know what, it'll be great to have someone like you being on the show. Help us make sense of the macro as a starting point, and then we'll just follow the conversation. Does that make sense, Danielle?
That makes perfect sense. So let's start out by comparing and contrasting two different moments, if you will, in Federal Reserve Chair Powell's career. October 2018, Moody's Investor Services downgraded the debt of General Electric, at the time the largest high-yield issuer in the country. Within 14 days, the high-yield bond market really did stop issuing new debt. For 41 days, there was not a single high-yield debt sale, not a single junk bond debt sale. That ended up rippling into the global financial system. We started seeing problems in the Japanese banking system. And it was pretty apparent that something that we call systemic risk was at risk of coming unglued. And that prompted Chair Powell to have to take a very hard pivot. We ended up with the stock market melting down in Christmas Eve of 2018. And Powell had to do something very abrupt and come in and kind of be the white knight and rescue the financial markets. Now, fast forward 4 years. So just after Halloween 2022, Amazon announces it's going to be laying off 10,000 employees, mostly in management and at their headquarters, middle managers, some engineers, white collar workers. This sets off a wave of other layoffs in Silicon Valley.
Right.
And we're right now into a third wave of major layoffs, mostly in white collar professions. And every time one of these waves rolls onto shore, you have a separate wave that follows right behind it of severance pay. So one after another, companies as a result go bankrupt. Individual households as a result, they go bankrupt. But it's happening in a very orderly fashion. There's no systemic risk that's been unleashed since what Amazon started doing with this massive layoff wave. And by the way, Amazon's still at the forefront of even the third wave. Nothing major has broken in the financial system. You don't have a credit crisis that's flowing through to the stock market. In fact, you have the opposite. Every time that there's a new layoff announcement that arrives, shareholders celebrate in the individual stock, pressing that stock price upwards, because it's a sign of the commitment of the CEO and the CFO to cutting costs and ensuring shareholder value is maximized. So you actually have upside in the stock market to what's going on in the real economy. So people are losing their jobs at the fastest pace since 2010. January, February 2024, 182,000 layoffs were announced. The biggest bankruptcy wave that we've seen, we're in the middle of since 2010. But individual companies are going out of business, one at a time. No contagion. Jay Powell has been able, unlike 2018, 2019, Jay Powell's been able to take down zombie players in the economy, one at a time. Been a very controlled demolition. And because of the white-collar nature of the layoffs, millions of workers are collecting severance pay. They're not applying for initial jobless claims. Right. So you don't see the pop in the official data. If you call Amazon or Google and you say, is this person still on the payroll? They say, yes, they are. Okay, so we have a great showing in non-farm payroll. You call the individual at their home. Are you still employed? They say no. What do they show up as? Somebody falling out of the workforce. So you have more than 700,000 people fall out of the workforce in December and January, which keeps the unemployment rate depressed at 3.7%. The more people who fall out, the lower the denominator. You're not going to see it reflected in the unemployment rate. So we have right now two parallel economies, one in which we're seeing automobile delinquencies, credit card delinquencies, even foreclosures of homes begin to pick up, and real pain on Main Street, and yet Wall Street in a celebratory mode. And Jay Powell able to hide behind data, the likes of which we've never seen, cushioned by severance pay, which will not show up in non-farm payrolls and will not show up in initial jobless claims, creating the facade of strength that really isn't there, while the inevitably delayed filing and increase in joblessness is held at bay. And that's really where we are. It's one of the reasons that there is such disgruntlement on Main Street today and such euphoria on Wall Street.
But Danielle, how long can this last? Because they can hide the eventually the severance package is going to run out. It's a matter of time, right?
That's
4 months, 6 months, 10 months, depending on who you are and how long you've been employed. There is an end tenure. So are we just on borrowed time at this point? Or you think there's a bigger, I know you're not part of the Fed anymore, but you may have a perspective, an insider's perspective. Of where do you believe this thing is leading then?
So we're definitely on borrowed time, and the clock is ticking very loud in the background. One of the largest sources of severance pay, Google, announced when it announced its first quarter earnings, they said, hey, we took a $2.1 billion charge for all of 2023. But guess what? For the first quarter of 2024, we anticipate taking a $700 million severance expense, meaning $2.8 billion for the full year 2024. So we know that we're going to fire more people in 2024 than we did in 2023, given the run rate at which we anticipate paying severance going forward. But there's a good reason that California has one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. And that is because we are seeing that portion of the economy, right? California is 15% of U.S. GDP, and it is definitely in recession. But there are other states where we're not seeing the unemployment rate rise as quickly as what we're seeing in California. But that is definitely what I would call California ground zero for the labor market recession. I would call Florida ground zero for the housing market recession, which is also being delayed, but is happening there more quickly than anywhere else in the country.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, right? Because the severance packages are shielding or are obfuscating the issue in the labor market. And the housing market, the rebates that builders are offering are hiding the true value for the housing because, yeah, you can buy down the interest, but it's essentially buying a cheaper house at a higher interest rate. It's just you're being fooled as a buyer. I wouldn't say fooled. Fool is a strong word. You're not being told the truth.
Well, you know, and listen, these buy downs began in the summer of 2022. So you have, you know, a not insignificant number of people who were sold in the summer of 2022. By the time the summer of 2023 rolls around and this 1 year buy down has expired, you'll be able to come in and refinance at a lower mortgage rate. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
They couldn't. And at the same time, in many cases, depending on where they lived, where I am in Texas, some of the largest states in the nation, much to a greater degree in Florida, their homeowners insurance premiums have gone through the roof, in addition to those mortgage rates that they're paying going higher. So there's a lot of shock right now. There's a lot of payment shock going around. Yeah. And yet, the National Association of Realtors is altogether too happy to keep the narrative and the spin going on for longer than you would anticipate. But again, we're finally seeing this. You've got Ginnie Mae. Ginnie Mae is the explicitly guaranteed, government guaranteed mortgages. Ginnie Mae delinquencies now, they're popping above the 10% mark nationwide. And so it's you're seeing it, but you have to know where to look. And again, the Spinmeisters, we happen to be recording this on Super Tuesday. This is an election year.
Yeah.
And they want to make sure that every false narrative remains intact if they can pull a miracle off through November the 5th of this year.
So, Danielle, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Where do we see this going? Let's say they are able to stretch it till the elections. Where do you see that? Like, what's the, will we as Americans post-election go through a major crisis mode and then it's a problem for another president? Where do you see it post-election? Because pre-election, I think everyone has a notion where it's going and we'll see in the next few months what happens. We'll get a good picture of that. But what happens post-election?
Well, so I think the best way to look at politics in America right now is quantitatively. When you look at the latest Gallup polling, about 43% of Americans identify as independents.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes time to be in the voting booth, you're probably talking about something that's more along the lines of a third, a third, and a third.
Probably.
But what that means is that two-thirds, and you have to think about this quantitatively, two-thirds of Americans are inevitably going to be unhappy the day after the election.
That's a huge percentage.
You're going to have so many disbelieving in whatever the results are.
True.
But a third don't want either presumptive candidate, and a third would tend to vote against either presumptive candidate. Again, we're just looking at this quantitatively, which means that two-thirds of Americans are going to be disenfranchised on November the 6th when they wake up the day after Election Day. And the Federal Reserve meets and releases a statement at 2:30 Eastern on November the 7th, a very unusual Thursday, Federal Open Market Committee ending. So a lot of unhappiness because as a country, we haven't been able to pull out a situation in which you could even conceive of a landslide on election day that was definitive enough to be satisfying for two-thirds of the electorate to even believe the outcome. Very, very, very tenuous times that we are in as a nation. You get a much better feel for that when you speak to people who are outside of the United States looking in and saying, wow, I've never seen such a divided populace, such a divided electorate.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. On it's kind of like going back to my Indian roots. When I even look back at it, and I've been in the U.S. for probably more than half of my life now, so I think I've been Americanized. But if I were to reflect as a new immigrant coming in, I'm like, this is not the world I came into. I might as well have done the there's division everywhere. I came here because this is the country that promises freedom, right? At least at least in the vocal terms that this is a land of free, land of opportunities. And to see this land being divided at, as you're saying, two-third of Americans, I actually never thought about it that way. You're right. Two-third of Americans are going to be unhappy November 6th, period.
And there's
whoever you are,
there's nothing that we can do about that when our politicians are purposely not working with one another. Everything that the current administration wanted in terms of immigration concessions, it received on a silver platter.
Right.
Yet at the 11th hour, the vote was pulled by virtue of one man saying, I don't care. I decree as dictator that you pull back your commitment to vote for that compromise, the compromise that is the very bedrock of democracy in the United States. Again, the current administration had made every single concession, and the immigration reform was prevented in the 11th hour. I live in the state of Texas. I live in the city of Dallas. We have seen our crime rates go up, and yet the politicians who were elected and in office had come to an agreement to slow the crime waves, and it was pulled at the 11th hour. If we can't even get basic legislation done, where on earth is this country headed? And I don't want to seem doom and gloom, but what I just described to you is simply a matter of public record.
Yeah, so Danielle, let's think about as how to make sense out of it. So let's say as a common man or woman, whoever you identify as, How do you make sense of the world, at least financially? Kind of like, because I see this, the Wall Street, the stock market, and the housing market as two common pillars for most individuals, right? And there's uncertainty in both ends right now. So are we suggesting, when you put your crystal ball, are you saying just keep your powder dry and just sit tight and let things fall out the way it falls out, and when the opportunity is right? No one can time the bottom, but there's a bottom. It doesn't seem like we've hit the bottom yet, especially with where you see the stock market going right now over the last few weeks. It's going insane.
So, in mid-December, when everybody perceived the Powell pivot to have taken to have taken at that particular Fed meeting, and mid-December, this is just a few months ago that we're talking about here, right? 3 months ago, everybody was saying cash is trash in 2024. Dump your cash holdings. There's going to be 7 rate cuts in 2024, fully priced into the market. Powell's completely folded like a deck of cards. And here we are, not even 90 days later, with the possibility that there's not a single rate cut in 2024. All of a sudden, cash is no longer trash. And the flip side of that is the following. You know, the more investors are, you know, stick it to you, boomer. People who say these crazy things on my Twitter feed. You know, you had some kind of a token that was priced at the highest dollar level in the history of these theoretical tokens just a few days ago. Mm-hmm. You've had people pour money into Bitcoin, which was flirting with 70,000. The more angry, the more people want to say, we refuse, deny, we decry Wall Street, what you define it as. In fact, we're going to show you that anger with our money. We're going to put it into the ultimate inflation hedge by putting it into the most speculative asset in the world. But again, you may think I just spoke out of both sides of my mouth, but I just articulated to you the thinking. And that is where we are. I go back to where we were on December the 13th, when cash was still king, when credit spreads are at the tightest that we've ever seen, and the stock market at nosebleed valuations, and the Federal Reserve has not moved a millimeter, and cash is still king. Right now, at least, you can take a good portion, call it 10% of your portfolio and put it in the riskiest assets you can possibly name. And you can take the other 90% and sit on the sidelines with a beer and popcorn and watch this go by, because you still get 5%+ on your cash. But
do it. True. Wonderful.
Speculate with the craziest of them. Put 10% out there. Take the other 90%, put it in cash, and then sit on the sidelines and be entertained, because there's no reason to take credit risk on in this environment when banks are telling you that charge-offs for credit cards and automobile loans are higher than they were in 2010. You're not being compensated for taking the risk on right now. Why bother? Because you're stepping into an angry electorate and you're stepping into an equally angry investing environment.
And so, Danielle, do you see, let me ask a question, which I think I know the answer because I heard you 2 years ago as well, and I've been following you since then. Are we in recession already?
Well, you know, I remind people all the time, because people do not want to be reminded of what I'm about to say, that in April of 2008, the conventional wisdom at the time was we were not going to go into recession.
Right.
Now, it took 16 months until the final revision for first quarter 2008 GDP came in, deeply negative, mind you. But at the time, the consensus was that we were not in recession. The Bureau of Labor Statistics in 1976 began reporting unemployment rates on a state-by-state basis for 50 states plus Washington, D.C., which equals 51. In 1976, they started collecting this data on a state-by-state basis. In 9 instances prior to 2023, when 50 of states, the number of states had rising unemployment rates, the United States was in recession, not veering into recession, but already in recession by the time the dust settled on revisions. In October of 2023, 50 states, 50, had rising unemployment rates. Unless that 10th episode in data to 1976 represented the first time that it's different, unless October 2023 was it's different this time month for the 10th time, then recession will be backdated to October 2023.
Wow, that's scary.
It's not scary as much as it's bureaucrats.
True.
Look at it as being government-paid statisticians, and they're getting 30%, 39% survey response rates. Then whatever they report first time out of the gate should not be reflective of reality.
True.
You should have to wait until they get 100% of the respondents to complete the survey before they finally get the data right.
Right. That's true. And Danielle, switching gears here really quick, I know there's a lot of talk right now about dollar de-dollarization, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like the world is getting towards CBDC, whether the Great American Reset, whatever. I think there are different terminologies being thrown around. What's your perspective on that? Should people be worried right now, from as you are reading the charts and the tea leaves, about value of the dollar itself in the long term?
So in the long term, of course. In the long term, debt and deficits will matter. In the long term, it mattered for Rome. And in the long term, it mattered for Great Britain. They never not mattered. Inequality during the Roman Empire was one of the things that tore it to pieces. And one of the reasons that reserve currency status was lost. I know my history of reserve currency status more than most. In October of 2023, you know, the country of Saudi Arabia, they issued a new form of debt in dollars. You know, the vast majority of the world has purposely chosen to issue debt in dollars, especially in the aftermath of the great financial crisis. $7.5 trillion of currency is traded on a daily basis. It's the deepest, richest, largest financial market in the world. 87% of that 7.5 million in daily trading volume is conducted in dollars. So while I am sympathetic enough to have all 4 of my children have learned Mandarin since the age of 5, while I'm sympathetic enough to what history tells us is inevitable, for now, until actions replace words, the point of de-dollarization chatter, it's just talk.
True, true. And Danielle, what needs to, from your perspective, what needs to happen, both monetarily and fiscally, to get your confidence high in our economy?
So these are the things that I'm writing about for QI Research this week and next week. I don't mean to seem far-fetched, but Mexico must rise. India must rise. Demographically sound countries, rich in resources, that need infrastructure built out. These countries, these currencies must be developed. The fastest growing middle income earners in the world are in the country of India.
Yeah.
Political reforms must take place. Highways, byways, airports, rail networks in Mexico, in India, they must be built. Currencies must rise. Peso is one of the strongest out there.
Mm-hmm.
6-year presidential term, June, Mexico's election, supply chain. Can you imagine? So much closer to the United States.
Yeah.
To where there's nothing existential and geopolitical standing in the way of building out that rich supply chain from northern Canada to the southern tip of Mexico. Having, building political alliances with allies for a change. These are the things that build future demographically sound countries and allow eventually for the baton to be handed to the next, not China on its knees and its great ally Russia on its knees.
Yeah.
If Taiwan could have been invaded, it would have been invaded by now. Right now, all stimulus measures are being directed into the country to prevent social disarray in the midst of a balance sheet recession drawn off of a residential real estate nightmare. So I'm happy to speak about the future of the next currency when you talk to me about a demographically sound country that needs to be developed.
Love that. Danielle, thank you again. This is great. This is actually awesome. Thank you for sharing all the insights, because people don't get to hear a lot of this stuff, right? It gets buried in all the noise that you hear everywhere. But I do want to point people to your own Substack. Can you talk a little bit more about what you do to help people who want to learn more about the macro, get a sense of the world, so make sure they can make informed decisions?
Well, you know, if you don't follow me on Twitter, that's a great place to start, at DiMartino Booth. If you do happen to run money for a living, or you're an established registered investment advisor, find me at QI Research. We've got a rich institutional offering. We publish 8 times a week. And if you're interested in being in the know, not reading what the sell side or the National Association of Realtors wants to sell you as a narrative, but simply being informed, then come to dimartinobooth.substack.com. The Daily Feather is a fabulous, very inexpensive way for you to stay abreast of everything that's happening in the financial markets, in the macro economy, where that intersects with Fed policy and the global economy. So come and become a Daily Feather subscriber. It's the smartest money that you'll ever spend. DiMartinoBooth.substack.com.
Well, thank you, Dan. I would love to add, I'm a subscriber, and I don't get paid to speak on Danielle's behalf. So want to put a disclaimer.
I didn't know you're a subscriber until just now.
Yes, completely. So what I would say is that the cost of not subscribing to an informed newsletter like Danielle's is much higher than the cost of subscribing it. Because if you're not in the know, you're going to make decisions based on what you're hearing from either the mass media, which breeds in fear, or your own ecosystem, which is usually an echo chamber anyways, where they're basically saying what you already know, and they're going to validate it. So you want people and resources that can challenge your thinking, give you more insights to make sure that you are furthering your thought rather than believing your thoughts. You don't want to believe your thoughts. You want to further your thinking to make sure that you can parse out the noise. So with that, I would definitely recommend anyone and everyone to go check out all the resources that Danielle has. She gave you a lot of different ways to connect for free on Twitter, or for focused research for institutions, or for people like you and I, right, as a listeners, where you can, you don't have to go the institution route, where you can still learn about the macro and what's happening in the beautiful brain of Danielle's. Danielle, thank you again for being on the show. Really appreciate it. Thank you for your time. I know you're busy. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time as well. It was a great discussion.
Thank you.
If you got value from this episode, you might consider sharing this content with a friend. But most importantly, be sure to take action on what you've learned. One way you can take the next step is to connect directly with Socket on an investor call. That link is waiting for you in the show notes below.